Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to City Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm Daniel Prue, and I'm joined today, as always, with my two co-hosts, Darren and Philip. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
I'm doing very well.
Good. Very well.
I'm actually wearing, you all will be, I know our listeners can't see, but I'm actually wearing, for this occasion here, my blue
nice.
Starfleet socks. So that will come nice. Up as we reveal our topic.
Yes. How's everybody feeling? You guys feeling okay?
You know, if medical technology could advance a little bit over the next 2 years to, you know, for that common cold, that would help. But besides that, not too bad.
All right. Fair enough. So the last time I was in the driver's seat, guys, we talked about engineers.
Daniel.
And I thought I'd just keep this theme going.
Driver's seat. I mean, if you're not even going to try.
I know. Well, hey. We're stranded here, so maybe we have some ground-based vehicles of some sort. I don't know. Anyways, Philip. So now I was thinking that we would keep this theme going, and
Captain's
let's talk about
it's,
all.
Okay, there's going to be a short list.
Yes,
but
yes.
Well, is that based on height or the number?
I mean, both, really, if you think about it. We will get to Captain's Assistant. I imagine it'll be maybe 3 or 4 years down the road, so maybe not. Let's rush into that. But I thought the next logical step would be to do the doctors, all of the doctors. So let's talk about, first of all, the role of the doctor.
Right. I mean, are you going to count the war doctor as a number, or where does
he doesn't
come?
Get a number. He's a 0.5,
okay.
So that doesn't count. Yes, we're probably going to make a lot of Doctor Who jokes, a lot of other Doctor jokes, but we're strictly talking about Star Trek doctors here. And so tell me what your initial thoughts on the role of the Doctor. I mean, obviously, you know, the role of the plot, we understand, but the Star Trek doctors have kind of taken more of an interesting role, I'll say. What do you guys think? Do you tend to gravitate toward the doctors, or is it just a hit or miss kind of thing?
I think everyone remembers their first doctor. But no. Well,
they're never ending. Geez, these jokes are never ending.
3 minutes in, Philip.
Well, I not being, I guess, medically oriented, you know, it's not usually my first position I would look to or reference to. But I think as we'll, you know, this is going to spoil the whole conversation we're about to have in 2 seconds, but like, I think they're very varied for Star Trek. Because I think there's some positions where you don't get the same people, obviously, but you can have sort of similar themes. But I think the doctors, even though they're all very usually passionate about saving lives and making that their first priority over anything about Starfleet, I think for the most part, though, they are very different personalities and different ways of doing it.
Yeah, I feel doctors, while also being consistently in blue, I mean, it's not like Command where they got to flip, you know, halfway through, but I feel there's kind of 3 categories of doctors. You have the
classic.
You have the new. But no, I'm saying like the classic doctor is kind of like Bones and Crusher, where they're the ship doctor. You know, they're in this their secondary character. You know, they're around. Then you have kind of, I feel like, the transitional doctor, which you have Bashir, where he's the doctor, but he's in his. The situation's very different, so he's adapting to that. And then I would say the third kind would be the caricature doctor, where you have like the doctor and Phlox, where they're very like the personality of that character is very unique and trying to draw us in.
Sorry, when you said doctor, it took me a second. I was like, wait, oh, because the EMH doesn't. Yeah.
Sorry, the emergency medical hologram.
I thought this was certainly going to turn into like Airplane, the movie, and it was going to be like doctor, roger.
I'm serious. Vector, Victor? Don't call me Shirley.
Oh, man, we could do a whole podcast with Airplane quotes.
Is it going to call Starship an exclamation point?
And it's the Enterprise D crashing, instead of through the window, it's into the planet.
It was William Shatner was in Airplane 2, right?
Oh, you're right. I think so.
which is not as good as Airplane One. That's why.
Which is
really
actually in space, if I remember correctly.
I can't remember. I think you're right, though. Yeah. Anyways, we're getting a little off topic there. Darren, you brought up a really good point, and let's move right into Phlox, who is a very interesting character. And let me check my memory. Our only major doctor, non-human. No, I shouldn't say non-human, because that would not include the doctor. Our only major doctor who is an alien.
When he's also representing his entire species to us. But yeah, exactly. Yep. And yeah, I mean, I know many people who feel Phlox is their favorite character, period, of Enterprise. He's very unique. He has a lot of backstory. He has a lot of personality. I mean, he's played very well by John Billingsley. And I think, yeah, he's a really good twist on it where it's not just another Federation doctor who's never been in space. Like, the whole exchange program dynamic was, I think, a very well-written portion of Enterprise.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because he obviously, like you said, plays off the other characters who are like, oh, this is so new and cool, and he's sort of like, this is old hat, you know, everything's, you know, weird and cool, whatever.
Like when they first land on the planet, and they're all like in awe, and he's like, it's a planet. Like, I've been on 37 myself.
He's glad you're excited, but, you know, But I think that was an interesting throwback because, you know, you have Enterprise trying to be a throwback and us diehards trying to wrap our minds about, but it looks newer and it's not. But then having this doctor who's a throwback in his methods, like leeches, you know, literally using
osmotic eels, things, very different than leeches.
But, you know, that was sort of like the sort of 19th century, you know, or 20th century Earth doctor, but, you know, in the future. And so that sort of gave this sort of prequel feel to it, I guess.
We've kind of discussed this previously, but I think there's a very specific curve that the doctors in Star Trek go through, if you're going chronologically speaking. As far as their techniques are concerned, obviously, like you just mentioned, Phlox is very traditional, holistic in a sense, that he's actually using these natural resources in a way that seems very almost folksy in a lot of ways. And then eventually, the doctors become more and more ridiculously hyper competent to the point that they just become technology, obviously, with the doctor in Voyager. It's an interesting curve, and maybe we'll talk about that later. But Phlox specifically, I think he probably is my favorite character from Enterprise. And the other night, I happened to watch A Night in Sick Bay, which is a great episode. And
might be coming up.
I feel like John Billingsley, like that was Neelix's character in a lot of ways, done better. done right. And I think maybe part of that has to do with the acting. Not that there's anything wrong with Ethan Phillips.
And the writing.
But he comes off, I think,
Ethan
a little...
Ethan Phillips isn't a terrible actor, but what he was given...
No, not by any means.
But, and I'm sure they're very different in works, but superficially, Ethan Phillips and John Billingsley are very similar. They're both short, comically oriented people. But like you said, you look at Neelix, Euclid, Dr. Phlox, and they probably could have played the other part fine. But one is clearly written better, you know.
Yeah, and those characters are similar, too, as in they're, like, almost obnoxiously
optimistic,
all the time. But it's endearing with Phlox, and it's annoying with Neelix most of the time, I'll say. Sometimes, obviously, it depends on the writing, like you're saying. So I really do like that aspect of his character, the fact that he is that unending optimist. He's both... the wizened character, like you mentioned, the worldly character that has all this experience, and also the one that kind of has to, like, you know, remind our characters of the wonder of being out there and all this cool stuff and happy and like, oh, you should be happy, you're experiencing things for the first time, you know, and it's all good. So I really like Phlox, and I think he brought a very important element to Enterprise.
Well, not counting Chef, I think he's sort of the Guinan of Enterprise. Because you have all the humans who sort of see them as, like, a really cool alien to talk to because he has such interesting views about everything. There's kind of, like, they all think that's kind of cool and funny. But then he sort of helps them. Like, he helped Hoshi in the first season, Strange New World. I can't remember the episode where she was, they had, like, Sluggo that they were taking care of. And, you know, he was kind of inadvertently coaching her through, you know, not conquering her fears. But then you have his relationship with T'Pol, because they're the only aliens on Enterprise. And so they at least have that thing of talking, you know, talking smack about humans at the dinner table. So,
yeah, now I'm just trying to picture Neelix meeting Phlox, and they're just shaking each other's hands vigorously. Neelix is like, have you tried a Leola Neelix. Root stew remedy for sore throat?
Mr. Denobulin.
I think they'd get along. Oh, I think they'd get along very
they'd
well.
Have to, like, the rest of the crew would have to lock them away.
Yeah, they would just constantly be sharing stories between each other. That would be an interesting meeting.
It would be just like the TNG episode where Data and Commander Hutchinson are, like, one-upping each other, and the rest of the crew just kind of, like, slowly stepping back. Because, yeah, I could totally see. He's like, well, did you know that in this sector, you can use this root, you know, as a laxative? And he's like, but did you know that that if you put it in a stew,
I once subsisted
actually,
for 3 days.
Yeah, I could totally picture that.
That would be funny.
But yeah, I think Phlox brings a lot, because he obviously has medical ethics that we recognize, but he sort of has almost broader ethics about how the world works, well, the universe, I should say, works, or galaxy works, about, and then you sort of have, you know, Captain Archer trying to figure out, you know, oh, we need to do this, we need to do that, and if only there was some directive of some sort, but you know.
Someone's going to come up with one of these things. It's going to be really helpful.
Right, and I think that was literally, I don't know if he was talking to T'Pol or Phlox, but it was because of Phlox, because that was Dear Doctor, was the pseudo-prime directive episode, if I remember correctly, where Phlox wanted to save the people or whatever.
Yeah, I think so.
Yo, there was a few good.
Or the two races, yeah, because there was one that was stunted, but he could make them the dominant species or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But if we move on here to the next Doctor, we can go to the real McCoy.
He's just a simple country doctor.
Oh, man. So let's talk about the OG Doctor.
Yeah, I was going to say, which one?
I guess we could very briefly mention that other old guy from, what is it called?
Oh, Dr. Boyce. Are you talking about from The Cage?
Yes, yes.
Dr. Philip Boyce.
And his gin case.
Who had that one scene. Yeah. Well, no, which was a good scene.
I actually meant which McCoy you were talking about.
Oh, no, I was specifically talking about Dr. Leonard McCoy.
Okay.
I think he meant DeForest Kelly.
Oh, we'll start with DeForest, but the characters are pretty similar, I would say. But anyways, so let's talk about Leonard McCoy.
I would say the
original.
Yeah, I mean, well, y'all talk about the Spock thing, but like, D, or you know, the TOS classic McCoy, like, he is like a ladies' man. Like, he is, because he's like the oldest one there. I mean, which is not like old, but I'm like, he's, because I don't know whether Scotty are the same age, but anyway, he's like the oldest one there, but he's like hitting on the 20-year-old yeomans like no one's business, you know, which I think is probably not appropriate. But anyway. Like, you just think of like Shorley when he had like the two dancing Vegas ladies, and he's like, mm-hmm. Oh, these. I can explain. Funny story. But
he strikes me as a man that knows how to have a good time.
Yes,
that's all.
He is. You know, obviously it's the classic. You know, the triad, and each one representing a different thing. And he's obviously the emotional one. But yeah, he's definitely one who lives life.
I could see McCoy as being one who actually likes hologram technology. Like, if he was around during the invention. I mean, I know he's in, you know, TNG slightly, but if it existed back in his heyday, I could totally see him being like, I hate technology, but this is the stuff. But, or even, and then eventually, you know, if he met the EMH, then he'd, you know, turn over in his grave. But as I'm sure half of him is what's really programmed in him, but we won't get that far. But no, McCoy's he's like you said, he's the original. He's setting the tone. His dynamic between characters, I think, is his strongest suit. You know, he's always, I mean, that was always the strongest thing of TOS, is the playoff between Kirk and Spock, and Kirk and McCoy, and McCoy and Spock, those three. I mean, he was in the upper echelon of main characters. He's in that triad, and then you have everyone else is kind of close, but still secondary.
Yeah, and I think you literally saw him break through in that, was it the second or third season, he finally got an opening credit. Like, it was just William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, and then it was...
And DeForest Kelly.
And DeForest Kelly.
Take that, Admiral.
Yeah, he of course, that is definitely his strong suit. He's got some of the best... He's also one of the funniest characters as well. And I love his old man curmudgeonly crankiness from time to time that comes through. Although, I actually kind of hit or miss on the technology thing, because I feel like he grew up in a time where all of that stuff existed already anyways. I don't really understand why he feels the way he does sometimes. But... other than that, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing that, you know, his relationship with Kirk is obviously super important, because if it was just Kirk and Spock, Kirk probably would have gone insane and killed him or something.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's very much, I don't want to say not progressive, though I guess you could argue that, but I mean this more in, he's very much a man of his time, like you were saying, Daniel, like, anything in the past is past, and that's the Dark Ages. He doesn't really think about the future. Like, this is all he knows, and this is where he lives, and this is the space. Like, he's of the present. And, like, and so anything outside of that, he's like, that's weird.
Yeah, and I also would say that McCoy is the most consistent in the movies from his character in the series. Where, I mean, we've talked several times about how there's movie Picard and TV show Picard, and they're often very different. But I just see McCoy as an extension of himself in all of the films he's in. I mean, from... the motion picture and his beard and medallion through, you know, Star Trek VI.
In short, Admiral, I've been drafted.
Yeah, through, you know, his Star Trek VI and trying to save, you know, Chancellor Gorkon. You know, it's all McCoy.
Wow. I love that scene. It's such a little joke, but it's one of the ones that makes me laugh much in Star Trek VI during the trial scene. And Chang's like, what's your medical status, doctor? He's like, besides a touch of arthritis, I'd say pretty good. And you have that one Klingon laughing.
He's just like, ha, ha, ha.
And then you just have Dr. McCoy has the huge smile. He's like, I got one.
And then, like, the Klingon next to that Klingon shoots him with a disruptor, you know.
Oh, man. He also gets the jab in at Kirk later on when he's talking about. Oh shoot, I'm not gonna be able to remember it now.
Well, I don't know if it's someone where he's like with Amon. That's the actress's name. That's not the character's name. But he's like kisses him and then walks away. And McCoy just turns and says, "What is it with you anyway?"
Yeah, he's so cranky in that movie. It's great. And then I'd pay good money to
for
have
him to
shut
up.
Yeah. Anyways, man, apparently there's a lot of good moments for McCoy in Star Trek VI. I didn't even think about it, but it really is. I agree with you, Darren, that he's totally that character is so well fleshed out, and I think is inhabited so wonderfully by DeForest. Is that like it was probably super easy for him just to play it and just to keep it the same between, even though there was the, you know, the 15-20 year gap or whatever.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he is sometimes angry, sometimes too angry, but that passion is always like, if there's a medical thing, that's all I care about. I don't care what else is going on. I don't care if there's phaser fire. I don't care if there's, you know, war. I'm helping this thing in front of me. And I think that's established every doctor that comes after. That's got to be your central passion, is telling the captain and everyone else to shut up because you have a patient.
Well, and I mean, it's not the best of the movies, but he gets a huge scene in Star Trek V, and we learn this backstory of the fact that he unplugged his father, and then days, months later, they discover a cure, and that moment profoundly impacted his entire life.
He also does super well, and we're kind of, he also does the super well stuff when he was supposed to have Spock's Katra inside of him. I thought that acting was really well mm-hmm. done as well.
Well, we'll later get to people being inside other people. That'll come up again. But...
Whoa.
But we'll keep it PG, so it's okay. Yeah, so I guess we could just briefly talk. But real quick, actually, before we move on, I wanted to just say I agreed with you, Philip. And one of my favorite parts about the Doctor role, the Doctor character, is the fact that they're the only people that can outrank not outrank, but pull rank on the captain, which I always thought is a really good source. It doesn't happen super often, but it's a good source of drama when it does. And the only person that could look at the captain in the face and be like, no, you have to go do this right now.
Yeah. And I think it's always interesting about, like, for instance, Phlox was never on the bridge. Well, I'll say never. I'll say 99% was not on the bridge in Enterprise. Whereas in TOS, McCoy was on the bridge probably 75%. He was sort of the color commentary for the bridge action that was going on. And so, you know, I think it'll be interesting how much Doctor, is on bridge, is in sick bay. So, like, I think you saw him in sick bay maybe 25% of the time or whatever. But
he must have thought it was boring. He just wanted to know what was going on.
Well, he went
on
all the away missions, so, you know.
Well, it makes sense to bring a doctor on one of those. I guess now would be a good time just to quickly touch on Carl Urban McCoy, who, like I said, I think is actually a very similar character in a lot of, and I think plays a great homage or a great version of that character as well. Is there anything you guys like, hate, feel okay about his version of McCoy?
Well, you know, when you look at him or the way he portrays that character or the way he's written or however you want to talk about that, at first glance, it does seem maybe like it's a cartoon version, like, oh, he's just saying funny lines like McCoy does. But I think he does it well, A. I mean, you got to do it well or else it's just stupid. But B, I think he does add a lot to it. I don't think there's, I mean, let's be honest, I think there's a lot for him in the first two movies. And maybe not even that much in the third one, if we're going to be honest. So I don't think he has a lot of stuff to do, but I think when he has time, he does it well.
We also get the lovely, in my mind, it's retconned completely, the entire origin of the Bones nickname, which I thought was just really good. So now in my mind, that was the same reason that original Bones is called Bones.
Yeah.
We just never got to hear him say that on, on the show.
Right.
Anyways, so, go ahead.
I was going to say, we did meet her in TOS. Nancy was his ex-wife, wasn't she? The salt vampire?
Oh, you know, oh my God. Was that like a reference to her? I don't know.
Well, he said that, I just got divorced and all they left me was my bones.
I guess I didn't even think about that. I just thought it was a funny joke. But anyways, I'll have to go back and look that up. So let's move on now to TNG. And a bit of a difference here because we
Dr. Pulaski. All right, folks. Put your seatbelts on for this one.
We can now talk about the only chief medical officer on a show that becomes the chief medical officer of the entire Federation, apparently, just for a year.
But then gets fired in a hush-hush incident.
Let's talk about Beverly.
Not now, Beverly.
Not now, Beverly.
So what do you guys think about Miss... What do you call her after her husband dies? Is it still... Oh, Doctor! Yes, of course. Dr.
Oh, that's my best trivia question ever in Star Trek. What do you call Beverly Crusher? I think she did suffer from, what's her role? Is she a mother? Is she a love interest? Is she a doctor? I enjoy her. I don't know, have anything bad to say against her. Except Pulaski seemed more competent, but that's about it. But I don't know. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I mean, she was had a very connected role in the fact that in a lot of her backstory, it's very tied with Picard, and I think, the fact that there's her, there's Wesley, there's all these different, connections. But she's a really good doctor. And we get a lot of great doctor moments where she's, she's doing the science and she's figuring things out and she's fixing O'Brien's broken arm and all this other stuff. But,
I think it's interesting because obviously in the real world, you had McCoy and then you had Crusher where obviously when you're trying to do TNG, you're trying to capture light in the bottle again, but that you have a doctor who still has this close relationship with the captain. It's a different relationship, but like she's on a first name basis, it's not captain and it is sometimes, but it's also Jean-Luc a lot too. And so she's not afraid to challenge him often. And so I think it's not the same role as McCoy, who's often challenging to Kirk, but she's also, you know, she stands up for her role as chief medical officer very often and very easily, you know.
Interesting story decision to have. The whole Jack Crusher relationship triangle thing, I know it was mostly for, obviously, for dramatic effect, but it was, it just kind of always left this weird what really happened kind of situation going on. And maybe that kind of detracted from her as a doctor slightly, because it's more about will they, won't they, than, you know, what's she up to in sickbay or whatever.
And I think we've talked about this, but I'll ask it again. What the will they, won't they? Because, you know, it's there. I don't think it's heavily there. Well, you know, like it's not like every other episode or you know, every three episodes. It's more like two times a season. They'll be like, okay, they have a thing, don't they? But like, did you all, obviously we got All Good Things, you know, and then never mentioned again. But did you all ever want to see anything more to that?
Yeah, I think they really could have done it in the movies. I feel there's not that, tension's not the right word, but the fact that they are...
Well, it was mature. It's not like, it isn't like a sitcom where it's will they, won't they. Right. It's a more mature relationship. Or, I mean, it's still will they, won't they, but it's, you know, it's not.
But there was no real reason for them to not, you know, be able to have a relationship in a handful of movies. You know, at that point, time has passed. I mean, a lot of time has passed, supposedly, between the end of Next Gen and, like, First Contact and such, like a year or so. Yeah, I think they should have really taken it farther.
I'm okay. I like the All Good Things idea, that it happens in the future, you know, and
they get divorced, and that's what love is. It's one big disappointment, folks.
I don't care. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. But yeah, I would not want to see the show burdened with that. I'm glad they didn't do it. That they didn't address it that often. When they did, it was just a little bit, and then things went back to normal. Yeah, I didn't necessarily want more of it, but I'm okay with like the end result, I suppose.
Yeah, and again, I guess that's, yeah. And I think I like Beverly. I'll say, and I'm sure, you know, when you do a rewatch of TNG, you know, oh yeah, there's this, and there, you know, that's when she was Quincy in space, or she had this episode or that episode, but I'm going to say she didn't have, wasn't given a lot to do with a lot of episodes. So I think she probably may have had more to her that we not necessarily got to see a lot of.
Yeah, I agree. It does feel like she kind of got hurt with not a lot of episodes about her. And some of them were, yeah, I mean, like, Remember Me was good and stuff. That literally had nothing to do with her being a doctor or anything, which is fine. I mean, it's okay to do that, obviously. But we didn't get a lot of things focusing on that aspect of her life. And
she's
so
a
it's
dancer,
a little bit different.
She's a director, which are all things that Gates McFadden is, which I think is funny. Yeah. But
so we should also briefly mention Pulaski, who obviously came in season 2. And then
one is her name, the other is
left.
Not Daniel.
and we've obviously made no secret of at least mentioning how much more competent she seems as a doctor than Beverly. But were you guys happy when Beverly came back, or would you wanted to see more Pulaski?
Well, and not to answer for all three of us, but I don't think any of us watched it in real time, so it's sort of retroactively she came back. Right. So it'd be interesting to someone who watched TNG in real time and had to deal with, or the doctor left. Oh, that's weird. And then there's this other doctor who's maybe not as important, you know, and then the other one comes back. But I am somewhat an apologist of Dr. Pulaski. I don't think, again, she was well served. I think she did her job. I mean, like, the actress is who I'm talking about actually did her job. You know, she performed it well. I don't think that's anything's her fault. I think, obviously, that they introduced the character very badly. I think, you know, the child, for many other reasons, I suppose, is not a good episode. But, you know, it's not a good episode for Pulaski's introduction. I mean, it's a very negative introduction in many, many ways. But I think she eventually, or at least has one or two episodes, that kind of, if not redeems her, at least showcases her off. I mean, Icarus Factor specifically was a good one. And the one with the...
When the Bow Breaks?
No. I don't know how you got that from that. But no, with the Zach Dorn.
Zach Dorn.
When she gets, you know, tells Data to bust up the guy or whatever.
Peak performance.
It's when there you go, peak performance. I think peak performance. Of course, it's her last episode, but that was also a good one for her. But so you know, obviously, you know, we've talked about McCoy, but you know, not a lot for her, not a lot of good stuff, but she did have some shining moments.
You know, it's also the character wasn't served by the way that she just disappeared, and then I think is maybe mentioned once or twice. You know, it would have been nice to have like a season 6 or season 7 episode. You know, just have her come back for an episode. I mean, I know she probably wouldn't have done it, but or even in the movies, like as a cameo or something, just to get some closure for the character. So, but that is the female Dr. McCoy.
Yeah, I can kind of see her as the traveling country doctor salesman. Like she's got her wagon and she comes through for a year and then she's gone.
Medical wagon to the stars.
Nice. And let's now bring it up to the youngest of all of our doctors.
Matt Smith. Well, I mean, it's interesting you bring this up. But.
Well, they have some similarities, I guess.
They're both British.
They're British. They wear bow ties. Actually, he's not even British, right? He's
Well, no, he's British. I mean, you know, ethnically, he's Pakistani.
Right. Anyways, it doesn't matter. We're talking about Dr. Bashir. Dr. Julian Bashir from Deep Space Nine. And I will tell you guys, I'll start right now because I love Dr. Bashir.
It's real fun.
I love him
medicine,
from season.
I would say.
I love Dr. Bashir even from season one where I know a lot of people do not like him.
Daniel. No. Nope.
I am a fan of that character from start to finish. And nope. He's one of my favorite Deep Space
Even
Nine
like
characters.
The half season where he was
show
a changeling,
full of
even.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, which is totally on purpose. You can tell when you watch the episodes that person and they were thinking about it the whole time because Deep Space Nine and those writers know what they're doing every time. But anyway, well, you know, Lordy, Bashir. Okay, for one thing, he's just a creeper, and I ignore season one Bashir. That's just me. Now, I will agree, not that you said this, but I'm agreeing anyway, that he is probably the characters with the most growth. In Deep Space Nine. I mean, there's a difference between season one Bashir and season seven Bashir, you know.
I don't know. I think Jake has like probably 2 feet by the end.
So I think when I'm watching Deep Space Nine on that rare occasion, I'm always like, later Bashir stuff. Now, he's certainly, his naivete serves him, not his egotism, but, you know, he's definitely going to one who's has, again, that passion. He's going to, though he is very more moral. Moralistics is the right word, but he's the one who's definitely going to go all the way to the line and perhaps over the line to do what he thinks is right.
Yeah, I really like how they pair Bashir, you know, interpersonally with Miles and with Garak. I think all the relationships that he has, they play off each other really well, and that's the thing. I mean, you have to remember, like in a writer's room situation. You know, it's not like it was set in stone that this character and this character are going to be friends. Like, that could not work out, but that actually became a great dynamic of the show, them going to the holodeck together, and there's the episode with the harvesters that they, you know, are trying to do the right thing, and there's lots of great moments with those two, and like I said, with Garak, where, you know, the spy, and it's like, what's he going to do? He's all shifty, but, yeah, you know, I mean, Bashir is a good character. And I don't know, for some reason it feels like DS9 is longer. Like, has more Bashir moments. I mean, I know, I know it had like the same number of episodes, but it feels like versus the amount of screen
definitely
time
feels longer.
We got of Beverly versus Bashir, I feel like we got way more of Bashir.
Well, yeah, I think that's also a product of the writing of Deep Space Nine, which was much, much more character oriented and varied among the characters, you know. So, you know, we don't have, you know, not every episode, you know, is like a Data episode. You know what I mean? Like it is TNG. You know, not of course, which is an exaggeration and not true, but
it's
and plus
true.
It's you know, yeah. So you're right. But
well, I was gonna say, and the writers definitely knew. Like, I mean, you can tell, like from season one, Daniel, you can back me up. like the whole time that he was genetically modified. Like, you can watch the series once you know that, tell the whole time that that is what was going on, and not just some.
We need to make this character more likable, Bob. Let's just say he was genetically. That's why he was a pompous jerk for half the time we knew him. That's a great idea. Let's
do
that.
He was lying the whole time. He was just trying to cover everything
that
up.
That will make people endear to him. He's been lying the entire time.
I was actually just going to bring that up, and I was going to say this is exactly what I was talking about before, where, you know, you had Phlox and then McCoy and Crusher, and now we have this very dramatic shift in ability and competency in Bashir, especially, obviously, later Bashir, when they decided to make him a superhuman. Which, yeah, is more hit or miss in
to
the
be
beginning
fair,
seasons.
Not the only superhuman in that crew. You do have a half prophet.
Oh, well, that's true. And a shapeshifter.
God,
so,
really,
yeah.
I thought we were going with the shapeshifter. If anyone has superhuman powers, it's Odo.
Yeah. But, even though it was obvious that it wasn't necessarily intended from the start, it is actually a very, very interesting aspect of his character, and it ties in with larger Star Trek lore with all of the augment stuff. So it's actually kind of a cool thing that they threw in. I wish it was something that was intended the whole time. That way, I would have felt a little more organic. But it is what it is. We go back and change things all the time. Data had a mom and six siblings, so, you know, whatever.
Those Thanksgivings were killer.
Yeah. Well, literally, if Laura was there, yeah, for sure.
Oh, man. But, yeah, Bashir, I mean, he certainly, you know, he had his, I was going to say Dax, I have to be specific. He had his, you know, puppy eyes with Jadzia, and then his ultimate, you know, time with Ezra. Yes, well, you know, I was pronouncing it in the troll way, traditionally.
Bajora, Ezra, I get it. One is a Star Wars boy, Ezra, the other one is a Trill woman.
Ezri also translated as better than Ezra, actually, with that. But, you know, you already have, like you said, his Garrick time, his Section 31, which I'm not a fan of, but that's very much a Bashir part. That is, if you're talking Section 31 in Deep Space Nine, you're inevitably going to be talking Bashir.
I think so of Section sort of 31 as more of a Malcolm. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
Look forward to next topic, the security officer. Yeah. I mean, so there's not really much else. We talked about most of the Bashir stuff. Is there anything else you guys wanted to touch on? I do think it's interesting.
He dated Rom's wife, not when they were married, of course.
Lita.
Yeah, and so. Yep.
It's also interesting that he gets to interact with one of our other doctors, kind of, in a roundabout way.
Oh, Zimmerman.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the, oh no, I guess.
He gets Data.
I know, but we don't get to see Crusher. I was going to say he got to interact with two
Bashir,
of them.
Well, yeah, he got to meet the EMH based on him, but that was.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if the actual EMH was in that episode or not.
Oh, you know. Oh gosh. I don't know. I want to say maybe it was.
I think when they were first writing it, there was a version of the EMH one. But anyways, it's not important. It's not important. So we'll move on.
The
Let's
unimportant
move on to
EMH Mark One.
The EMH, probably in a lot of ways the most interesting of all the doctors.
At least it's the nature of the medical emergency.
I would probably say the one that gets the most screen time.
I would also say the one who has the most
episodes dedicated to his character development.
Well, I would say McCoy. Well, again, 7 years versus three in a movie,
right?
You know, six movies,
yeah, so percentages or whatever,
but I would say McCoy probably maybe has better percentage because he's almost literally always on screen to the certain extent, but EMH, yes, has the most character development, most episodes, blah blah blah.
So, but yeah, no, he's a really good different character, a character written with boundaries and limits that they, you know, are able to loosen up slowly over time.
Their parameters and subprograms.
Yes, yes. I was trying to break it down for the, you know, the average listener, Philip, okay? But
You know, the last time I rewatched Voyager, it struck me how really hard-edged he is in the first few episodes.
Like, he does have to this, be on.
He has this amazing growth, but it almost like turned me off from him when I rewatched it last time. I'm like, my goodness, this guy's a jerk. I mean, I get that he's always kind of angry and cantankerous, but like he is real tough those first couple of episodes. And then they find him, they find kind of his voice and stuff. And thankfully, because he's one of my favorite characters on Voyager.
But that sort of leans credibility, because when you get into like, you know, season 6, I think, where he goes helps Dr. Zimmerman, and they explain that the EMH-1 was retired, or at least, you know, made into miners or whatever they were.
Could he be the miners? They're again, 5 or 6 years old only.
Do not use this many resources for such banal manual labor. I don't know why that you would create an entire race of thinking creative beings just to mine things.
Instead of glasses, just put some hard hats on those isocomps, you know.
Why don't be pickaxes? I mean, why is he holding a pickaxe when his hands could literally be pickaxes?
And he could just be a box with super big robot arms. He doesn't have to be a person. Anyways, that's neither here nor there.
But I think it's interesting, because it's not really necessarily retcon, but the doctor you saw the first season, that was horrible, and that's why they got rid of it. But like, I guess with Justice Bashir, you know, I think there is a lot of growth between season 1 and season 7 doctor. It is interesting, because I think, you know, Kes is one of my favorite characters in Voyager, and maybe overall. But, you know, that scene where she's going to Janeway in one of those early episodes, you know, fighting for the right for the doctor to be able to turn himself off and turn himself on. And Janeway's like, well, you know what? I've heard some stories about the doctor being rude and terrible. And, you know, and so you sort of have like, it's not just a black and white issue. And so this evolution of what is a hologram, you know, and when does he become sentient? That'd be a good question. You know, what Voyager episode do you say, you know, does the doctor suddenly become an individual? So.
I think my favorite Doctor moment has to be in Future's End, the one where they go back in time to the 90s.
Yes, when he gets his mobile emitter.
But specifically where he is rescuing the crew and he goes into that barn and the guy like shoots through him and he just looks like, yeah, that did nothing, and then phasers the guy. It's just, giving, that's what I was meaning, like, you know, I do like how they had a constriction on their writing in the beginning of like he's only can be in the sick bay. I think they could have maybe played with that a little bit more, like maybe have an episode where someone collapses just outside the door and he literally cannot reach them. You know, that they could have been some more dramatic tension. But I like how in a very plausible way, you know, they, with the addition of the mobile emitter, you know, lets his character go around, but still gives him some vulnerability, as opposed to, you know, oh, let's just install holo emitters like all over the ship or something like that. But it was very fun, a fun way to take the character.
I mean, in some ways, he is sort of the magical character for that series, because every series has a magical character. It's sort of Spock, because, oh, I'm Vulcan, I don't catch whatever disease you all catch, and TNG's Data, I can go anywhere, you know, I don't get radiation. And I think for Voyager, it's the Doctor, and then maybe you can argue Seven, whereas, you know, you can beam him down anywhere, or if, like, the entire crew gets kidnapped or knocked out, there's always the Doctor. You know, he can always sort of be the magical character that can always still be up and running, like it's T'Pol, you know, and everything. But I think that is good, because I do love the Doctor taking, you know, saving the ship. I mean, it you could argue it's repetitive, but I don't care. You know, taking over the Kazon, him and Suter, you know, against all the Kazons. I mean, I love that, just that part, and then anything else, too. I mean, message in a bottle, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Two so EMHs many taking on the buttons.
You know, Darren, I was just sitting here thinking of your little scenario you just came up with, where somebody collapses right outside the door, and I'm thinking, man, if only Star Trek had some sort of technology where you could move characters from one place to another.
It's
but the most
dramatic of I can see how it got shot down in the writer's room, but I think of like the holodeck episodes we've seen where a character passes through the door and just disappears, and I could see him like reaching his hands and they literally cannot go past the door. And, you know, this is obviously in an emergency situation where there's systems offline, Daniel, like the transporter. But
I mean, the holiday.
Not the holiday.
But now I want to see him like take like a chair or a pole and kind of like put that out the door and try to hook him and like pull him in.
No, for comic purposes, because I think you're trying to make it dramatic, but I want to make it comic, where it's like Paris, because you can make it comic instantly, and he's like trying to pull Paris in with a pole or something, and he, like,
that would be
he's
hilarious.
Hitting his head or something.
There you go. Don't go dramatic. Go comedic. Like he's passed out for some alien whatever, and they're like, oh, well, Mr. Paris, you've almost made it to Sanctuary. And then he's like looking around, and he's like fashioning a rudimentary lathe, and he's trying to hook him and like pull him in.
Well, see, I also like, I think for, and I'm saying this all to my head, so I'll probably be wrong. I think with the Doctor and with a lot of, unlike some other special quote unquote characters within Trek, I think they do tend to remember that he is different. Like he will have problems. He will have issues because he's a hologram. He's not just, you know, a regular person. Like, you know, there was the episode where his Matrix was going wrong because he's been gone too long. That was one where they had like the holographic Dr. Zimmerman. And just, you know, there's been times where aliens try to download him or upload him or whatever. And then, of course, one of my favorite episodes ever is Light and Image, where his ethical program subroutine, like, breaks him. Like, literally breaks him because he has to save two people at the same time. And he ends up choosing Harry versus the other girl. And then you just sort of have the crew having to give therapy or, you know, or whatever, comfort to him. And he, and like, I like how the show episode doesn't end. Like, it's just sort of ends with, yeah, he's kind of broken, but we're going to let him figure it out. Like, he's a regular individual and not just a computer program we can erase.
This is also like the end of this curve that we have where these doctors become more and more incredible. So basically at the end here, we have
every
literally
doctor.
The most, so yeah, every doctor inside this doctor, the most, you know, the most advanced doctor you could ever, ever have. So it's interesting, but like you would think that there would be no more medical problems after Voyager gets back and like they can just duplicate the doctor or whatever. But, you know, I guess we'll maybe never see that.
I don't know. Does he have pickaxes for hands, Daniel? I mean, I could see a lot of improvement here, but.
But I think the cool thing is that we all like the EMH, but I think the challenge it poses, how many other things would you then make holographic? Because he seems to work pretty dang well, right. And within Windows it stopped. Yeah. Like, should we have
emergency,
you know,
command?
Whatever.
It's like everyone gets incapacitated. You don't have a data. But say someone took over the ship and like gassed everyone. You have a program running that detects that, activates the emergency command hologram on the deck on the bridge, who then phasers everybody and takes back control of the ship.
And fires the photonic cannon.
Not the photonic cannon, Philip. But I mean, I think as a last point for the Doctor, we have to remark on Robert Picardo as just an incredible actor to bring that performance, the variety, the comedy, the seriousness, the ethical moments. I mean, he brings so much into that role and interacts so well with the Seven of Nine, with Janeway, with B'Elanna, Tom, all the crew have. I mean, he is a very central character to the day-to-day life on the Voyager. And I just have to give it to Robert Picardo for that. He's that just his personality and his acting ability.
Right. And I mean, and the fact that he was literally, like, we want to talk about where they were, he's in the sick bay because that's all he can be. And yet he managed to have that role become so much more.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. So guys, let's look towards the future by looking into the past. What do we want to see for
Klingon
the doctor
doctors?
Role?
I want to see a Klingon doctor.
Definitely a possibility,
with,
right?
With bat lifts for hands.
That's just ridiculous. I mean, you're just... So wait. Does that mean instead of a scalpel on the little tray, it's a little tiny bat lift, and that's what they use to perform surgery? Because that'd be amazing, I'm just going to say.
In Klingon medicine, you don't get patched back up,
Klingon
you just
medicine,
heal.
Yeah, that's right. Knife heal you.
No, I think Klingon medicine is the equivalent of, like, middle school softball coaching. I think you're just supposed to walk it off.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point, Darren, because we're going to be seeing this, we're going to be following this Klingon crew. It's very possible that we will get our first, I mean, That one guy, Uncle Phil, the Uncle Phil episode from
Enterprise.
Those were scientists, though, right? Those weren't
actual scientists. But yes, I know we have seen.
No, there was it was the guy who always plays Klingons, like in the Star Trek 3 and 4. He played the Doctor.
Outrageous,
the Klingon Doctor.
Yeah, so we have actually seen them before, but maybe not in so much of a capacity. It would still be an interesting change. What about for the actual Discovery itself? Is there anything you want to see? Do you want to see like another version of McCoy, it'll be a contemporary of his, presumably? So we actually get to see someone of similar.
It's really
going to
matter in what their mission is. Is it Discovery, like they're going off into unexplored territory? Is it Discovery, they're partnering with other aliens? I mean, we don't know yet, but I think that's going to really guide what kind of a sickbay setup we get.
But they know.
Well, I know they know.
They definitely know.
I know they know.
No, they...
Well, we hope they know. We hope they know.
But, well, I hope... Well, I'll say it one in two ways. I hope it's not... either the Doctor isn't human, or it's just not... like we've seen before, because I mean, you know, we've had some variety, you know, men and women, well, men and woman. I mean, I guess you want to count Pulaski, I guess, but well, not as like a main, you know, whatever. But yeah, and then you have, one alien with Phlox. If you want to call the UMH an alien, I don't know. That's really not really an alien. So I don't know, some variety, I guess.
Well, he is an alien because he's from that station.
Jupiter Station.
But I knew that.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, is it Jupiter Station? Oh, nice.
Yes. It's right next to that giant cube that they built the Enterprise, the Vengeance in. You know, secret hidden in orbital. Yeah.
No, we don't keep any sensors out that way.
Darren, I thought you were going to say it's next near that big, huge. Well, we call it a planet.
A huge thing.
You really can't miss
it. The clouds and the gravity. What are they called?
I mean, once you turn a left at Mars, you're not going to miss it.
I was going to say, it's right past the Mars defense perimeter.
If you see rings, you've gone too far.
Jupiter has rings.
It does. Anyways, so, hopefully they do something neat with it. Something interesting, like you said, Philip, something new. But I agree, Darren. That was a great thought. Let's get a real Klingon doctor. And
will the Klingon wear blue?
No,
they'll wear pink. It'll be like it'll blend in with the blood of their crew.
You mean the Pepto Bismol? That's what they'll wear. Yeah.
Pepto Alert. Dirt, dirt, dirt. Although honestly, I do want to see a smart Klingon doctor. I want to see a doctor that is breaking the stereotype that we think we're gonna see with, you know, leeches and knives and stuff. Like, it's obviously. You know, I like how the things they've established with Klingons of being like a caste system, and you have different, you know, like the people go into, because yes, they obviously have to have engineers and they have to have, you know, non-warrior castes. But we just don't know about them, and we only see mostly the military arm and the governmental arm. So I want to see an actual doctor who is a doctor and who teaches our people some things, and it's not just, you know, they're not the barbarians, because I can't believe a space-faring, you know, species could operate like that.
Well, Darren, then you've never met the Pakleds.
They need things to make them heal.
We are one of many shows here on the Nerd Party Network. If you want to hear about the other Star franchise, there's Aggressive Negotiations and Great Shot Kid. Try Filibuster and Nerd Nuptial, or our newest shows, Missing Frames, Punch It, and Owl Post.
Woo-hoo.
There's so much to listen to on the Nerd Party Network, coming to you every day of the week. So visit thenerdparty.com today and subscribe. So, Philip, if people wanted to talk to you about what is the best shade of blue for their socks, how would they get a hold of you?
See, we didn't even touch on the blue versus teal debate, and I think that's something we can all talk about. So they can find me at NC Public Servant on Twitter, and they can tell me whether they prefer blue or teal for their doctor, and they can use hashtag CA3. Ask CA3.
Hashtag all blues matter. Right. And Darren, if people wanted to get a hold of you about what the Klingon doctor should be named, how would they do that?
Doc, obviously. But, you know, I
But in Klingon.
Doc Claw.
would it be extremely racist?
But I just hope the Klingon doctor will not confuse a pre-ganglionic fiber with a post-ganglionic nerve. I mean, come on. That's like basic stuff right there.
Amateur hour.
Yes, Doc Pla is a great name, I think, for our Klingon doctor. But actually, I really want to see what they name him now. Because I could see the Discovery crew.
Or her.
Or her. I could see the Discovery crew. I could see them making the name Klingon, but enough humanish where you're like, oh, we'll just shorten that to Doc. And he's like, no, it's Doc Pla. And he's like, you know, we're going to just call you Doc with a K. And it's just... And it's just like, oh, that's good.
Oh, man.
But they could find me online on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi, or my website, drscifi.com, where I troop as a stormtrooper of the 501st Legion, also podcasting in my other show, Goodnight Moon, where I talk about space exploration with my 4-year-old daughter and Klingon doctor names.
And if people want to get a hold of me, they can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word, as in blue is still the best color. Philip, sir, what are we chatting about next time?
Well, you know, we talked about Dr. Crusher and her love of theater. So next week, we're going to be talking with someone else as a guest who talks about their love of theater in Star Trek. And so we're going to be talking about some specific episodes from the Star Trek franchise and how well they are related to the wonderful world of theater.
The wonderful world of theater.
No, you're thinking of Disney again, Darren.
I think that's exactly what I was saying.
Sorry.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue, stranded here on SETI Alpha 3.